after a busy day. Ah! Raccoon Radio Show with Gino Alash. Hard rock and heavy metal. Every Tuesday from 8 to 10 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM, Kingston, Ontario, Canada. Stay heavy.
Broadcasting 24/7, 365, you're listening to 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca, Kingston's only campus community radio station. Tune in for the best local programming.
Fly on the Wall is made for the observers, those of you that notice, the pollinators, wanting to share the things that they love, and the disturbers, trying to shake up the now's landscape. Come around for an intimate yet lively dive into, well, a little bit of everything. Indie, folk, rock, house music, you name it. Music deserves and needs to be shared, and I am here to do that with you all. This is Abby, and Fly on the Wall will be playing on CFRC 101.9 FM every Thursday from 3 to 4 p.m.
Well, hey there, everybody. It's time now for When We Wake. I'm your host, Andrew Shaver, and you've got me for just under an hour. And on today's show, I've got a wake-up call. Today, I'm chatting with Tim Chason and Jake Sharon of the East Pointers. The East Pointers' new album, Schooner Town, is due out January 23rd, and it's rooted in friendships that stretch decades. In small-town life, and in the long road of making music together. It's also shaped by loss. The record carries the presence of their late bandmate and friend, Cody Chason, who is also Tim's cousin, and whose spirit is felt all the way through these songs. What's striking is that Schooner Town isn't a quiet record. It is joyful, it's rhythmic, and it's built for rooms full of people. It's music that celebrates connection, memory, and the act of showing up for one another. Tim and Jake join me for a generous, wide-ranging conversation about home, tradition, collaboration, and carrying someone with you as the music keeps moving forward. Here's my chat with Tim Chason and Jake Sharon of the East Pointers.
G'day, Andrew.
Nice to connect, man. Thanks for having us.
Likewise. Oh, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. And now, Jake, are you sitting in Space Camp Studio? Is that what it is?
Space Camp Studio, yeah. It's AKA my basement.
Sure.
Yeah, it's like gear is kind of just all over the place, been in the middle of a few different things, but...
Great.
Yeah,
what are you in the middle of?
Well, working on a couple, like producing a couple tracks for people, cool. And I'm doing this like film gig, doing some Foley. Some sound effects for a local film company, so that's been kind of fun.
Well, yeah, it has been fun?
It has been fun. New adventure for me. I'm doing, like, footsteps and door slams and clothes rustling, and it's a lot more work than I expected, but it's...
My buddy Danny Ledwell just started doing that as well. I'm sure you know Danny.
Right, yeah, we know Danny, yeah.
He produced my new album, but he texted me, because I'm also an actor, and he was doing the... I can't remember what it's called, actually. It wasn't the Foley. It was, like, the clothing rustles.
Yeah.
I can't remember what... He had a different name for it. He was doing
textiles
it for...
Textiles or something.
Something like that. Like, something in touches, cloth and tissue
cloth
and touch.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, something like that. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm doing your scene right now. I was like, oh, that's cool.
Nice. What are you working on, Andrew? What are you...
I spent the majority of my career acting and directing throughout,
cool.
You know, theater, some TV, film, video games. But I do a little less of that now because, you know, that was when I was in Toronto and in Montreal. And that's not to say it's not happening out here, but I didn't move to Dartmouth because I wanted to, like, up my acting career, you know. I still do that, but I work as a therapeutic clown with sick kids at the IWK hospital.
Wow.
So that's pretty cool. That's a cool gig.
Amazing.
Yeah, incredible.
Yeah, man. So I appreciate you guys having me on my podcast to interview me.
Let's dig in.
So Schooner Town.
Yeah.
She's coming in on the 23rd. Is that right? The 23rd of January?
Yeah. We actually were supposed to put this album out in September. So we, like, started this like cycle of songs where we would release every like whatever 6 weeks and have, you know, maybe five or six songs, and then I was the dummy in the band to mess everything up, but I had a baby in September, and I was like, I don't think we should put an album out like at the same time we have a festival and you know, a new baby. Anyway, so we had to keep kind of everything rolling, so we had a couple more songs to release, and so we kind of started that about a year ago, kind of releasing these songs and just the whole concept of the album and everything, and we're finally getting to the friggin' date.
I'd love to talk about the album and the feeling of the album and the place that is Schoonertown. Let's start there. Talk to me about this place that is Schoonertown that you've created musically on this new album of yours. Jake.
Yeah, so we've done lots of reflecting, I guess, since losing our bandmate Cody. I don't know if you guys touched on that before.
We haven't yet, no.
Maybe now is a good time to...
Let's chat about Cody, who Tim was your cousin and passed away in 2022, right? From a heart aneurysm, is that right?
Yeah, January 22. Okay. Yeah, so it's, yeah, we just kind of, yes, it's been 4 years just recently, and it's, I mean, like, yeah, absolutely still doesn't feel real, like losing someone so close. Mm-hmm. It sparked a lot of the, I guess, the conversation around this album. Jake, I'll let you take it.
Yeah, basically we were really reflecting back on the times we first met when we were, whatever, 12 years ago or something, and connected musically and had this friendship and really had this dream of starting a band. And also, you know, coming from small towns, Tim and Cody growing up near Surrey on PEI, and I'm from smallish town in Ontario, but yeah, we just had the idea of, like, you know, sometimes you want to get out of the town and sometimes you stay, and there's kind of this, you know, when you're in your mid-20s or something, there's this sort of turmoil of what you're up to and where you want to go. And we created this vision of a lobster fisherman who was in this town just trying to figure it all out and falling in love and, you know, maybe partying too hard, and it just sort of captures all of that, we hope, and sort of takes the listener to this place in time, and hopefully it's a lot of fun. That was kind of the main goal of the album, was to create something something upbeat and fun, and and create a place. Yeah, Schoonertown.
Yeah, right. Why was that the goal, to create something fun with this
album? I think on our last two records, were like, we had a lot of the House of Dreams album done whenever Cody was with us, and then I think whenever we lost Cody, it was a dark time, I think, for a lot of people, and I think some of the music reflected the just the sadness that we felt. And then it was actually Cody's wife that said to us, she's like, after all that, she was like, no more sad songs, guys, come on. And wow. She was half joking, but I think for Jake and I, we were kind of like, we set off on this journey of the Schoonertown album with like, okay, let's just like try to write fun, like, you know, try to write fun songs, like just, and fun tune sets, and just really bring as much like kind of, you know, somewhat of a party energy, but like how Jake was saying, like capturing this like moment in time of like, I know for Code and I growing up in Surrey PEI, like trying to capture those, like a bit of the foolishness that we all went through, but also like the feeling of you know, getting out of the town, but also realizing how, you know, beautiful that is, just, you know, being there in that moment. But I think trying to capture something fun was like a good little like set, like a good little like goal, I think, because I think we can, you know, as a songwriter, I'm sure yourself, like just kind of wavering a bit on what to do and where to go, and we just try to set that out for us and see where it took us.
We started playing some live shows again, which made the writing sort of, we geared it towards the live show a little bit too, trying to capture some of that kitchen party energy and take it to the stage.
Well, look, I for one would be very happy to be able to see this song live. It's the song that kicks off Schooner Town from the East Pointers. It's Misty Morning. More of my chat with Tim Chason and Jake Charon of the East Pointers after this.
Swing with me, 1, 2, 3. Dance to the devil in the kitchen, repeat 4 steps to the rhythm that the fiddler sings. Stay up to the misty morning, come swing with me. 1, 2, 3. Dance to the devil in the kitchen, repeat 4 steps to the rhythm that the fiddler sings. Stay up to the misty morning, come.
From Schooner Town, the forthcoming album from the East Pointers, due January 23rd. That is Misty Morning here on When We Wake. Now back to my chat with Tim Chason and Jake Charon of the East Pointers.
As you referenced, Jake, you met 12 years ago. Let's go back there. Like, how did you guys? Obviously, Tim, you and Cody grew up together. Let's start there, and we'll get to how Jake came into you. What was growing up like for you, Tim, with Cody?
Yeah. So Cody and I are. Like, we grew up right beside each other, and there's like the whole slew of Chasons, and anyone who's been to Eastern Prince Edward Island would know. I think Cody had 120 first cousins.
That's it?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Yeah. And we shared, I think, 55 of them. We were on, yeah, his mom and my dad's side. Anyway, so
I made them count. Do you remember that? Tim, I made you guys count to see if you could name them all that one time.
And oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. A competition. And then name them from oldest to youngest.
That's right.
And by family.
How'd you do?
Co thought we tied. I thought I won, personally.
There was a forgotten cousin. We won't name who it was.
Yeah.
Because they're still forgotten.
Yeah. 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 Don't mention him. No.
You got kissing cousins. You got forgotten cousins. Yeah. You got them all on VI.
Everything. Oh, man. Growing up in a small town. Yeah. So we... yeah, so there's a whole slew of us that were like, you know, brothers and cousins that for some reason a large group of dudes. And so we all grew up together, went through everything together, and also so grateful for that kind of clan. But Code was always so talented, but he never, he kind of struggled in his teenage years to like play in front of anybody, and he thought he wasn't very good. And we grew up playing fiddle together. That was our first thing, that we would do. And then, I know when he would, you know, drink and he could drink, and that fella could drink like a fish. He, uh, he would get the guitar out at parties, and everyone would be like, okay, Cole, come on, get the guitar. And he'd finally, you know, that was the thing that could kind of get him out of his shell. And so we were finally able to kind of jam again. And then
is he in his late teens, early 20s? Where are you?
Early 20s, I would say. 20s, and okay. And he was like kind of, you know, closet picking tunes and a wicked picker, but he wouldn't right. do it in front of anybody unless, you know, and there was lots of alcohol around. Gotcha. And so whenever I actually, before these pointers, I used to tour on my own, and I was like, Code, why don't you start playing bass in my band? Like, I just wanted him to come with me, like to play and to tour, because we were obviously yeah. such good buddies. And so we kind of, like he came on the road with me and we had a lot of great times. And then that's whenever, I guess, Jake, or maybe it was right around that time that you had come to Prince Edward Island for a show at the Confed Center.
Yeah, I spent like I spent a month here doing a theater gig. And
what were you doing in the theater gig?
I was a Christmas show with a few friends. Steph Cadman from out west was sort of the lead in the show. And I was mm-hmm. here, I guess, 5 weeks in total in Charlottetown, my first time on PEI. And I just had the best time.
And you were acting.
I was playing music. I was part of the
cool.
Yeah, part of the musical, whatever group on the side.
You weren't the yeah. lead role.
I wasn't. Yeah, not much of an actor, but it was really fun. And I met Cody. He was playing at the old Triangle Pub with his brother JJ cool. every Thursday, and ended up down there. And then we'd end up at somebody's house into the wee hours playing tunes and just hit it off. And then eventually, Tim, I think you were on tour at the time.
Yeah, I was away, and I remember getting back home, and Code was so pumped. He's like, "Oh man, you got to meet this guy, Jake." He's like one of us. He's like one of the boys that, you know, into music and just whatever. Great guy, and yeah, we just would stay up all hours just playing music together. Just like wow. And Code, like he had just gotten a banjo recently around that time, and yeah, he was sounding so great. And then I don't know how much time had passed, but we really did. Talk about, like, we would kind of randomly meet up with Jake at like a music festival or a music camp or something like that, and yeah, just always kind of kept in touch. And we would joke about, like, oh yeah, we got to start a band someday, like the three of us, and just, you know, it was never really serious. Like, we just loved playing together.
Why wasn't it serious? Because Jake was living in Barrie, Ontario, or from Toronto, or wherever you
were. Yeah, you were all over the map too, Jake, at that point, and you were touring with like Liz Carroll and all a lot of different people. And I was also doing I was putting a lot of effort into my own like kind of solo career, and Code was also kind of touring with different people and with me, and he was just starting to kind of. Like, I remember the Ennis sisters had asked, who are a band from Newfoundland, had asked him to come on the road with them. And that was like a big deal for him, because he was still trying to like figure out what he was like, how he was being a musician. And we were talking fairly serious about like trying to record something, or just like we should do this sometime. Yeah. And then it was probably, I guess it was December of 2013 that Code, like, he had kind of, and he openly talked about how he was in and out of the hospital for his mental health, because it was pretty serious for him. He was right. really struggling, and so there was a few kind of bouts, and then the last time that he was in the hospital, he decided that he was going to quit, like, everything, drugs, alcohol, his medication that he was on, like antidepressants and all of this. And so he and that was a pretty challenging time for him, and also like just trying to get that like trust from everyone to like to trust his like, and to like to believe in his opinion to do this, and like the strength right. that he thought
to be strong enough himself to do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So and so he was living with, he was kind of, after that he had kind of crashed with me for a while, and it was really a tough time for him. And I think it was,
how was it for you?
It was challenging too. Like, I think he was not in a good spot at all, and but he was determined to like make it through. I think he was also, you know, very stubborn, and you know, he said he was going to stick to this, and then he did. So we were doing a lot to like try to really like give him some like happiness, like something to like keep him from like ducking down, you know. So
are you married at this point, Tim?
I wasn't married at this point, but I was living with my now wife, I guess. Yeah.
Cody was living with you and your partner.
Yeah, yeah, he was there, yeah. And so he was unofficially living.
Sure, no.
He, Cody did a lot of unofficial living with people.
Sure, sure.
He was good at that. You know, he had a special talent.
It's a real skill, right?
Yeah. Oh, man. And so and I guess it was there was a moment where I was like, he was playing banjo, and I could see the joy that he was getting out of, like, just kind of picking some tunes and writing some tunes. And it was definitely a moment where I was like, I called Jake and I was like, I think you have to come to PEI, like, ASAP. I think it's the only, like, bit of, like, light that's, like, the only spark that Code has is whenever we talk about, like, this potential, like, little group that we could do or recording or whatever. And so, I called Jake, and I don't even know if I told Code at the time, but I was like, as soon as you can come to PEI, would be awesome. I think that would be great. And Jake was like, let's do it. And so he booked a flight out, and we just like spent a weekend recording our first little EP. And then and he just like, not, I wouldn't say it was like this instant change, but like he still definitely had many moments, and but it was like this, definitely like a light went off as to like what the future could hold for him.
And this was around 2016?
Yeah, 2014, early 2014. So we recorded it that spring, and then he actually met this lovely lady who ended up becoming his wife shortly after that. And she books a really big festival in Australia. So she came for the East Coast Music Awards, and I had met Chloe before, and I had gone to play this festival. And her and Cody had met that weekend, and then sorry, Jake, I'm talking too much.
You should chime in. No, you're doing a great job.
Yeah, but basically, I think we could all see the spark, and even Code was like, you know, newly sober. It's a different experience trying to. I was like, Code, you just gotta like. There's definitely interest. You just gotta go hang with her, and like, you know, you're like cheering them on.
We all need a wingman.
Yeah, she's so sweet. And so, and it was probably maybe a month after that, they kind of kept in touch. And then Chloe mentioned to us, like, oh, maybe the East Pointers could come to Australia for this festival. And so we were just like,
maybe we could.
Yeah.
Maybe we could.
Yeah. And so I think that was like the thing that, like, we booked this little tour that fall in Canada. And then it was like, and we were still like not sure what we were going to do, but then we went to Australia, and then it was like everything kind of changed, I would say, at that point, because it went so well.
Oh, that's so interesting. And like everything coalesced in Australia, and you're like, this is...
Yeah, totally. It was just like we played this festival. It's called the Woodford Folk Festival, and it was like totally mind-blowing to us. And and also Cody meeting Chloe and like going to Australia, like and kind of like having a new love and also having this band. And falling in love with it there, and just the music went so well down there.
It really
there.
Forced us to write music too, because we didn't have enough material to play like a show. So we had like a few sets of tunes. We're like, okay, we gotta write some. Wow. We gotta write some stuff before like next week.
Before next week. Nothing like a little pressure, a little urgency to get it going.
I'm falling off of the wagon again. Running through my veins, it's no secret that you're dangerous, but I can't stay away. One taste of you, and I'm high as the moon. It scares me to say, you think I'd learn from all my mistakes, but you know I'm just a sucker for the same old pain. I'm falling off of
may go blind, I may throw it all away. I take the demons and the spirits to swim with mermaids. It's been a while on the narrow, on the straight, but like the changing of the tides, the darkness waits. I'm falling off of the wagon again. You're the maritime moonshine that's running through my veins. It's no secret that you're dangerous, but I can't stay away. One taste of you.
Tune Maritime Moonshine from the East Pointers' forthcoming album Schoonertown, due out January 23rd. Tim Chason and Jake Charon of the East Pointers are my guests today on When We Wake. And before the song, we were talking about how at the very beginning of it all for the East Pointers, they had been invited to a festival in Australia and thought, oh boy, we better write some songs. What were the writing sessions like, Jake? If you're like, what's that feeling? How do you go about writing a set of music in a week that you're going to perform for the first time in Australia?
Yeah, it was fun. I think we had a similar like background of listening to a lot of traditional like Celtic music. So we had these tunes kind of running around our head, but we were determined with the East Pointers to write some new tunes in that sort of old style. And we had this vision of you know, bringing in some different sounds and making it a bigger thing for some of these stages that were way too big for us at the time.
As a trio, you mean? Like that stage would have been too big for the just.
Well, I think we just kind of like. We had to expand to you know, we were playing right after like a rock band or something, and you know, so we had to try to it was really fun. We tried to make our sound as big as possible, and it was really cool seeing how obsessed Cody got with the tenor banjo and just like took off. You know, he was always a great musician from when I met him, but he just played all the time and got really good and had these cool little riffs which, you know, sparked some ideas in Tim and I, and yeah, we kind of all had our little roles musically in the trio, and it felt really exciting and fun and kind of easy.
What do you remember of the call from Tim saying, Jake, I think you got to get out here. This is the light that Cody's seeing. We need to do this thing together. That started it all. Like, do you remember that call? And then you getting on a plane?
Yeah, I mean, I was
like, as you said, the next weekend.
I was probably waiting by the phone with my suitcase packed. And
you were. Right. Yeah.
No, I think I knew. I could tell in Tim's voice that like Cody really needed this, and we'd become so close. We'd spent some like a lot of time together, and. And, you know, I enjoyed it just as much as he was. And, it seemed like I didn't know what I was doing other than a couple of gigs here and there. And it seemed like, crazy looking back. I wouldn't think I'd be still doing it this much.
Is that right?
I don't know. It's just a little idea back then. And it's turned into, our main thing, which is pretty cool. But
and now you're living on PEI.
Now I'm in Charlottetown sitting in a basement studio.
Right. That you built yourself.
Yeah,
eh?
Writing songs about trying to get out.
Is that what you need to do to be a card-carrying musician in on PEI? Write songs about getting out?
No, I love it here. I'm so grateful for the community on PEI. It's incredible, and there's tons of great people and amazing players. And yeah, happy to be here.
You have kids. Kid, you have kids.
I do, yeah. I have a stepson who's 12 now, and then my daughter's 7, just a few days apart from Tim's son.
Okay, wow. And, wow, what was that like? Because that was within the East Pointers timeline 7 years ago. The two of you, no?
Yeah.
The two of you had kids at the same time?
Yeah. We had 1 week at home.
What was going on in your life? You had 1 week at home for the births, and then you were back out on the road or something? Is that what you mean?
I've never really talked about where we would have been at that time, AJ. Yeah, I remember saying to Jake and Code, like telling them that you know, that my wife and I were expecting. And then Jake kind of like ducked away, whatever, shortly after, and then came back. And because he was checking with his wife to make sure it was okay to tell us. And he was like, guys, we're expecting two. And I was like, what?
High five.
When?
That's amazing.
Yeah, totally.
Are your kids buds?
Yeah, they're pretty good buds. Yeah, they're pretty good buddies. They're like sometimes like an old married couple, and then other times like 7-year-old boy and girl.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
they're pretty fun.
Timmy, you were saying earlier this evening you were out at fiddle lessons with your kids?
Yeah, so my like Cody and I's grandfather started a fiddle festival like 49. It's going into its 50th year this summer, and basically it's like a small little festival that like all the proceeds go towards teaching kids or anybody in the community to learn how to play for free.
Amazing.
So we all grew up doing it. And so like Cody and I and some of our brothers and cousins, there's probably about 8 of us that took over the festival in 2016 after our uncle had passed away, who ran it for a long time. And so it's a total labor of love. It's an incredible traditional music festival.
That's not Gullahala. These are separate festivals.
This is a separate thing. Right. Yeah, it's called the Rollo Bay Fiddle Festival, and it's and yeah, it's just totally to preserve the music and the dance, I guess, from the area. And then so every Monday night, like, it's a total, like, when I started taking my son there when he was 5, it was like I showed up on Monday night fiddle lessons. I'm like, so nostalgic. Anyway, so I and so all his other little cousins, a lot of them still live out there in Surrey and Rolla Bay. So I take them out every Monday, and it's pretty
cool.
And
they love it?
Yeah, they do. Like, my son just started to kind of take into it now, and so he got his first taste of, he played on stage for the first time recently at a little concert. He's starting to really like it, which is cool. But it's just really like the whole festival and the lessons. It's like, and there's a lot of people there, and it's just got a nice vibe out there. It's really it's really sweet. Okay. Yeah.
Jake, what was growing up like for you? In it was Barrie, right? Barrie, north of Toronto. Barrie. So you say small town. It's like, well, I mean, anywhere within 3 hours of Toronto. It's not that small. So what was it like for you? You grew up. I mean, we know how Tim grew up playing music on the island. Same for you?
Yeah, I mean, Barrie is great. It's grown a lot. It's changed so much since I was there. But it was a great place to grow up.
Yeah.
And my dad was really into East Coast fiddle music and Irish fiddle playing. So we grew up with a lot of vinyls being played around the house, and my two brothers both played the fiddle. And I was kind of just stuck playing the piano and the guitar. We'd go down and busk and make a few bucks at the market.
Did you feel stuck?
I don't think it was the first thing I wanted to be doing as a kid, is playing piano for these old-time tunes and stuff. But
I see. Because of the tunes, because of the audience, because of the instrument?
I mean, I think initially I was into a lot of sports and stuff. And I was kind of just doing this music thing because my family was doing it. And then I really got into it. I had something turned.
What, do you remember what age you were when it turned?
I mean, probably mid-teens. I had a couple friends that were starting to play around home and stuff too. It didn't have the, you know, not the same Celtic culture that exists on the East Coast.
Right.
But there were little pockets of like, you know, Irish sessions and fiddle contests, and we kind of sought these out. I made some great friends and ended up on PEI through all that. And
no kidding. No holding your own.
I guess. I apparently have the accent.
Yeah.
So they say.
I heard that Cody said he's one of us.
We did a gig at the Confed Center a few years ago, and we passed around a petition to make me an honorary Islander.
And did it work?
And we got a lot of signatures.
Got a lot. Enough? Yeah. Sufficient signatures?
I don't know if I'll ever get enough.
Oh, we love you, JJ.
Today on When We Wake, I am chatting with Tim Chason and Jake Charon of the East Pointers. They have a new album en route January 23rd called Schooner Town. From it, here's a lovely little fiddle tune called The Cabin. From the East Pointers, forthcoming Schooner Town due January 23rd. That's The Cabin, a tune written by the late Cody Chason and re-recorded by his cousin Tim and Jake Charon of the East Pointers. Now back to my chat with Tim and Jake. So you're going on a nice little UK tour for like 8 days with one day off. Are you going to spend that day in Dublin before Dublin? Oh, yeah. What are you going to do with your one day off on tour?
Get to Dublin and get a true Guinness.
I figured.
As soon as possible. It is a big travel day, I think, that day to get to Dublin. So, but that's my goal because I've not been to Ireland before. Jake's been
get
a couple
out
of times.
Of town. How is it that you've never been to Ireland, Tim?
I don't know, man. I was always really, for some reason, I remember being like obsessed with Ireland as a kid. And then, like, I grew up playing like quite, like, you know, Cape Breton, PEI, Scottish fiddle, and like didn't listen to any Irish, like my dad, didn't listen to any Irish fiddle.
I'd like to know more about the difference, but continue talking about that, and then I'd like to go back on what the difference is there.
Yeah, for sure. And I think I remember being like maybe 20 or 21 and hearing Liz Carroll, who Jake actually toured with. She's an Irish-American fiddle player who's like, you know, Grammy nominated and is like kind of the, you know, really, really, really talented. And I remember listening to her and being like, oh, what's this? Like, this is freaking, yeah. And so it just, one thing led to another, and I just became obsessed with like Irish fiddle. And I think for anybody who like growing up playing a certain style, like I don't play Irish fiddle. Like I can do little bits and pieces, I guess, of ornaments, mm-hmm. but it's like, it's almost like an accent. I would describe the two styles. Right. So it's, you know, similar tunes, but played differently, different tempos and different like lilts and different grooves. Wow. I don't know. Jake, you might be able to explain this a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, the deeper you go, the more differences you, like even within Ireland, there's so many styles between the counties and types of tunes, like, you know, polkas are played over here in Cork or whatever, and the Clare has the slides, and I'm probably not qualified to talk about all this either, but it's really cool. And the more you listen to, the more you hear the differences. But a lot of crossover these days too, I think, especially in a place like Glasgow, a lot of Irish tunes and Scottish tunes kind of blending and doing their thing.
Right.
Well, the interesting thing I think I've heard is because, like on the East Coast especially, I mean, there was a lot of Irish that kind of came to, you know, PEI, Nova Scotia, and obviously Newfoundland, but predominantly Scottish. Folk, so their style, they say, is like how people play here is like kind of how they played in Scotland a couple of hundred years ago.
That's so interesting.
And so in Scotland, the style kind of was much more influenced by Ireland and surrounding areas. So because we were so secluded out here, the music was kind of more preserved in a certain way, but also. It obviously changed over the years as well, like just with a lot of things. But I mean, you could almost say like in the last, well, since the internet, like a lot of players who are like younger than us would have been able to have access to anything. So the styles it is interesting with fiddle music. Could probably talk about it all day, but there's just like there's differences in areas, and
it's kind of like it's like an accent or a dialect. And I think they say that about like Ireland, a lot of the licks and the rolls, they kind of mimic the lilt that they have in, when they talk and the speaking and singing. Yeah, and same in Scotland, it's a little bit more rigid, like the Scottish language. And and in the same way that accents evolve, that, you know, the tunes are evolving too in the styles.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is interesting for sure.
They say that the French in Quebec, from the words, the accent, even I think they extrapolate a little bit, but the vocabulary, I was reminded of that because they say it was similar to the French that was in the court of Louis, I can't remember, 14, 16, but, you know, hundreds of years ago,
right.
It was that French sort of stayed preserved, as you were saying, it's the Scottish fiddle music stayed preserved on the east coast of Canada until it began to evolve. I think that's so interesting.
Cool.
Wow.
Yeah, it's cool. And mixed with like the Acadian, like the Acadian culture as well.
I guess so. I mean, that's completely different. Like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's completely different. And there's definitely crossover with the styles and, you know, some of the tunes that are still played that have been around for, you know, a couple of hundred years as well. It's definitely an interesting, like cultural thing.
Yeah.
Fiddle.
I mean, how do you guys go about writing your songs? You know, we've touched on it sort of indirectly twice here, where I think they were both from you, Jake. You said the MO on Schoonertown, basically the goal was to write something fun. And when you went to Australia, you had to write songs because you needed to fill a set of original songs as opposed to just traditional songs. How do you guys go about writing your songs?
Yeah, it always changes. I think when we were writing with Cody, it was like super collaborative. I mean, it still is collaborative. And we would always, like, there was just another person in the room that we would, could bounce something off of. And then when we lost Code, we were still writing to stuff that Code had like written, like voice memos and
okay, that's why he's credited. I mean, I don't know if that's entirely what you tell me. I noticed that he was credited as a writer on this, on Schoonertown. There's the three of you have written the album.
Yeah, and I think, like, even though all of these are new, we still have Code as a co-writer. I think just for pure inspiration, and just like we still, you know, kind of consider him as a member of the band, and we. Like, even though the majority, actually there is probably two fiddle tunes on this album that we found of Codes, but we couldn't find a recording good enough to like put it on there, so we re-recorded it, which was pretty interesting. But I think with these songs, we kind of had, like, lyrically we had a bit of a theme, and obviously Cody was a big inspiration, even just his experiences. And so we really just, Jake and I wrote everything and recorded everything down exactly where he is right now. And just kind of having the time to, like, sit with everything. And I'm sure, you know, like, if you're in a studio, sometimes you can feel rushed or you feel like there's this deadline, like, for a project. We didn't feel that way. So it was really like, you know, we could sit for hours and just, like, you know, think about a lyric or a part in a song and not feel like pressure to... Yeah, so we really kind of, this was the first time I felt like we really went through an album with like it was super intentional. Every song and almost every friggin' bit of the of the record feels very like we put a lot into it. So it was exciting to kind of start rolling stuff out.
And Jake, you produced this.
Well, Tim and I,
collectively, the two of you produced it.
Yeah, Tim and I produced it together. I guess I was setting up all the mics and stuff, but we're both
okay. So you
were the engineer.
Yeah, gotcha.
But we're both pulling up ideas and sounds, and it was really, really fun. We've worked with some great producers in the past, did a couple albums with Gordy Sampson, who's, you know, a hero of ours.
Not too shabby. Yeah.
And Derek Hoffman, a guy in Toronto, did our last two EPs, and we just felt like this one, we had all the tools and we had the space, and I think because we're both dads, we can't exactly go away for, you know, we're already touring a bit as it is. We can't go away to a studio, and it just made sense to do it here this time and take control over everything just to see how it goes. And it was really fun.
How long did the process spread out?
Oh, we didn't rush it. I think we started treating it a bit like a job. I was just thinking, Tim, we were like, making the most of our time.
Why? Because it is a job? I mean, why are you treating this like a job, Jake?
I know. We're just making the most of our free hours because they're limited through the day, as you know. And it was fun. You know, some days we'd try something and nothing would happen, and that's okay. And then other days we'd lay down the whole track and then sit on it for 2 weeks. And so it was a flowing process.
Yeah, no kidding.
I think we've been pretty lucky we have a really great management team and our label at Network. They're like, just, I think, checking in with them regularly and kind of feeling like you have some cheerleaders too, like that. Because obviously it has to come out at some point, but there was no like pressure to like finish it by a certain point. But actually, that's a lie. I'm just thinking some of the conversations with the
I mean, pressure's good.
Sorry, there was a bit of pressure, but in a good way.
Nice pressure.
Nice pressure. Whereas I think Jake and I both work well on somebody, because we would have sat down there for God knows how long. But
loose deadlines that we tried to stick to.
Some loose deadlines that we definitely didn't hit many of them. But no.
But they're, yeah, they, I think it's, for us, it's like, we're, yeah, feel grateful for the team that we have because they, they've been great.
Let's get into the weeds here for a second about network. How do they work? I mean, I remember talking to Rose Cousins, your buddy Rose Cousins, about who's also on network and sings that beautiful song on Safe and Sound with you guys. Meet You Again?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we will meet again.
We will meet again.
Yeah.
That's so beautiful.
Thanks. She's a legend.
Is she ever?
Yeah, amazing.
She's awesome.
She was telling me about how network really just sort of has figured something out about how to market music, how to deliver music to and connect musicians, the music with actual real listeners, as opposed to being, you know, passively streamed hundreds of thousands of times.
Yeah, I think they're just like totally had their thumbs on the pulse like from the get-go with their company, and like obviously had tons of success in the past with you know, signing Coldplay to their first North American deal and all this kind of stuff, and so many successful bands. And I think in the digital age in the last few years, they've took it up a notch too, like with like gearing it, like the analytics and the data and everything behind it, like but I mean, at the end of the day, I think it really does have a lot to do with the artist and how much the artist is putting into it. It's just like they have a lot of tools that can help that, but if you're not like, you know, willing to create the music and also be like on social media every goddamn day, then it's not gonna work.
That's part of it for you guys, hey? You've got to be on social media,
unfortunately.
Yeah, I think that's I mean, this is a whole other thing, but
it's not, though, is it? It's not a whole other thing. That's maybe the problem.
Yeah, it's baked into it now. But the I know whenever we started this album cycle, like even like, you know, they were kind of saying like their social media guy Dom, who's been amazing, he's said, you don't have to do all this, but if you want to see the best results, okay, then it's good to be like a bit more active, because we would go like months without doing anything on social media. Right. And I think because we put so much effort and time into this album, we were like, we got it. Like, you know, we got to get just as much like out of it. Like we almost had to put just as much effort onto the other side in order for it to get heard. So, and I do think that, like, obviously these days, it seems like that's the best way to get, like, it's almost like the only strategy that anybody's really using in order to get any music.
So what is that strategy for you guys?
Oh, I think it's just being like present on it and, like just trying to like get the music heard, I think is the number one thing. So, and also just, you know, to sell more tickets to your shows and get the music heard more and to tour to the places and have people come out. So I think for us, it's, you know, we've been doing some, like teasing of the songs, get the song out, doing a couple of covers, just stuff like that, really. And
how does it feel having been doing it now? Because does it come easier? Does it come more easily? Does it come more naturally? Or is it still like I wish I didn't have to do this?
I would say I would say that I stopped caring a bit more. I think
that's got to be a good sign.
Yeah, I think so. I think because we used to be very like not precious, but like, you know, you wouldn't put something out on social media unless it was like exactly how you wanted it. And I think you just kind of have to be like, whatever, like just put it out, like even if you're just singing a song and like,
right,
I think if you want to get heard or if you want your music to get heard, you kind of just have to keep pumping it a bit. You have to kind of do the hustle a bit, which kind of sucks sometimes, but also it's like, it is kind of exciting too, I think. But
it seems to me like it benefits you. It benefits a musician, a songwriter, an artist putting music out to get to that point that you just referenced, Tim, which is like, I don't care. It is whatever. It feels like it's part of it is part of releasing music in 2026 now successfully. And I know that I struggle with it. because I that when you we talk about being precious, it's like that resonates with me. I'm like, I don't want to be on my and I don't think that I'm not saying this is good. I feel like I should probably get out of my own way, and I'm kind of asking, I'm asking for help. How do I get out of my own way? How do I say yeah, whatever? Anyways, I commend you for it, Jake. How do you feel about it all? What's are you equally at peace with what you need to do outside of making the music to release music in 2026?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it's definitely gotten easier. I don't dislike it as much as I once did, but I certainly wouldn't do it without Tim.
Oh yeah, and vice versa. I think it's nice to like be under the blanket of these pointers and not your individual name.
Yeah.
But I think it, like, I've heard people reference it as like, you know, back in the day whenever like every band started making music videos and like all the other bands were like, oh no, I'm not doing music videos like that, you know? And then all of a sudden, you know,
right. That's the analog. Okay.
Like even prior to that, like, like radio and whatever. And then it turned into social media. And now I think we're totally in this era of like, if you don't do it, then, I mean, you don't have to do it, but like, if you don't do it, then you would.
People don't have to listen to you.
Yeah. You'd be maybe at a disadvantage, but maybe not. I don't know. It all depends what phase in your career like you're at. And, but I think at our age, like it's not as natural as like, you know, the like 10 years younger or 20 years younger. It is interesting. It's I just more and more have realized that it's like, you just got to do it and not suck it up, but like try to make the best of it, I guess. Yeah.
The longer the East Pointers, the longer you guys keep going, the sooner it is you can just hand the social media content for the band off to your kids. I mean, you're only a few years away.
Yeah, totally. We're not that far away. Oh man, that's actually kind of scary.
Yeah. Fellas, it's really nice to have met you both like this, and congratulations on Schoonertown. You've from what I've heard, you've made a really beautiful album.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for having us.
We're fans of you too, Andrew.
Yes.
Ah, thanks, Jake.
Awesome.
Thanks, Jake. Thanks, Tim.
See you guys.
Thanks so much, Andrew.
She got away, shook my heart in Colville Bay. She got away in Schoonertown on Sneo. She got away, shook my heart in Colville Bay. She got away in Schoonertown on Sneo. Her eyes were golden brown, held much more hope than this dying old town. Too pretty to stick around in a hurry, hurry. I'm the son of a fisherman, no, it's how we live. Like Jack and Rose, but in a dinghy. But now those days are gone, wearing her heels and got her makeup on. I hope he knows where you came from.
shook my heart in Colville Bay. She got away in Schooner Town, I'll stay out.
Listen to that boat rocking on the bay. Exhale is right. That's She Got Away from the East Pointers off of their forthcoming album, Schooner Town. Schooner Town is due out January 23rd, and the East Pointers are heading out on tour. The day before the album comes out, they'll be in the UK on tour for a week or so in the UK, and then at the end of February, they link up with Alan Doyle in Newfoundland and head out for a month. What a show that's going to be. EastPointers.com or at the East Pointers for more information. I'm at the Andrew Shaver or at When We Wake Radio. Our theme song is Got You by my pal and yours, Noah Reed. Thanks for listening.
KPP Concerts and CFRC 101.9 FM are turning up the heat this winter with a stacked lineup of shows. At the Broom Factory, don't miss out on Metal Fusion cellist extraordinaire Raphael Weinreth Brown on January 23rd. On February 14th, you can see local rockers Casador take the stage, while Canadian punk rockers The Flatliners are live on February 20th. And don't miss out on Daniel Romano's Outfit on March 13th, followed by Schoolhouse and Braden Lamb on March 15th. And the winter season rounds up with The Sheepdogs live at Kingston Grand Theater on March 16th. For a complete list of shows and ticket information, visit kppconcerts.com. Visit the Screening Room, Kingston's only independent movie theater located downtown at 120 Princess Street. They specialize in playing art house, international classic, and cult cinema, along with Hollywood's best new releases. People also